Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Well, good morning. Hi, Dave.
I didn't say hi to you when I walked in the studio. Hi, Dave.
You seem busy, Steve, so I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, the start of the show is always just crazy around here. You know that.
The pressure.
Woo. I've only done 5 or 10,000 of these. You never really get used to it. Right, Mary Vandeveld?
You got it.
So, beautiful day again.
Yeah, supposed to get cloudy, though, I think, later.
Yeah, stormy later.
Mm-hmm. Can you two be positive?
And 40s tomorrow.
And it's going to drop at the temperatures. Yeah. And, oh, mayhem.
But then 80s, like, on the weekend.
Right, guest day in a moment. Like, right now, you could go outside and you could literally, take off your shirt, sit by the river, and wait for someone to bring you a drink. Now, it's not going to happen, but I'm saying it's that kind of weather.
You know, I actually ran on the Riverwalk yesterday.
Did you?
And it was great.
Somebody was chasing you?
No, I decided to go for a run, okay. And it was great. I ran the Riverwalk down to, like, Lake Street, where it ends, and then back to the lake, and then back here.
Did you see the mayor practicing?
I didn't see the mayor, but there were a lot of people sitting there, Steve, doing exactly what you suggested.
On the Riverwalk.
I don't know if their shirts were off, but they were waiting for someone to bring them a drink.
The Riverwalk has several great places to sit and watch mob figures throw bodies in the river.
That's not what's happening.
Sit and enjoy dinner, a cocktail, if you're coming to town.
It's great. It really is nice.
Yeah, it really is nice. So, speaking of the mayor was here yesterday in his final in studio as mayor. We'll play a chunk of that back for you after 7 o'clock this morning. Chuck Todd's on, Brady and Adelstein for your Thursday politics. Anna DeVlantis later, and also later, Dave. This one's for you. Whiskey after 9:30.
Okay, is that in studio though?
The whiskey?
Yes.
I think so.
The whiskey will not be in studio.
Okay. Oh, the whiskey's on the phone?
The whiskey is on the phone.
Yeah, that makes it tougher.
Mm. Yeah. It stinks. It's not even Dave's birthday yet. We're talking whiskey.
Yeah, you know, have you noticed I've backed way off on you being a lush?
Yeah, because I've got a lot of company on the show now.
That's a fair point.
I think you've realized that.
That's a fair point. Let's go to the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, just an awful story. The body of missing Southwest Side pregnant teen, 19-year-old Marlon Ochoa, has been identified and people have been taken into custody. She had been missing since April 23rd. This is just an awful story on every level. And it's one of those things where, it could never happen to you. And then it does, and there's no sense, or there's no way to make any sense of it. Do we know anything about the people that have been taken into custody?
No, but the family says she was at that house because they had advertised on Facebook that they had baby clothes, and so she was picking them up in a stroller, I believe, as well, for her unborn baby. And so I'm in a lot of those Facebook groups, the, like, mom groups where you share stuff or sell things, and they have front porch pickup, and we do it all the time, so it's scary to think that
this is the old argument. Are people crazier now, or do we not hear about it before? Because in the old days, and I'm talking about the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, you would go to a neighbor's house to get something. I was talking to somebody this morning who just bought a car, and they drove to a complete stranger's house to get the car, and the car was at a barn out in the country somewhere. Can you not interact with strangers safely?
I'm going to say people are crazier.
I think you're right.
I think based on reading these stories every morning and doing this stuff for as long as I have, I think people are crazy.
But then again, people get into cars, Ubers, with people they don't know at all. And, that kids casually do that. And I'm sometimes leery to get into them, to tell you the truth.
Well, and what have we learned in the last 6 months? Every 18 to whatever year old woman who gets a little tipsy does not get in an Uber without friends. ever.
Right.
Even if you have to rent a friend.
But and you have to check. Well, as a person who's Uber a lot, you have to check the car and make sure you're getting into your Uber.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Tipsy. Judgment, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I walk everywhere. What? All right. Next. Mayor Emanuel, CFO, said the city's pension investments tanked at the end of 2018, led to a negative return that's going to force Lori Lightfoot to come up with more than $200 million more than expected in the 2020 budget. The money will be needed to cover higher pension payments and bond payments. The CFO has not answered for this yet?
No. Not that I saw. I don't know. Maybe Steve has more information on that.
I think there's from an investment standpoint. I'd be interested to know how the investments have done this year, because everybody's investments tanked at the end of last year, but have done incredibly well this year so far. So I wonder how much of that may have been made back, or is there some sort of, because you remember this from the state level.
I was going to say, there's Pritzker's extra state got money, extra money, right? Yeah. Right?
I wonder if that's the same case, you know, since the beginning of the year, or if there's a problem that we don't know about yet with bad investments.
And why do we not know? Because, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day and sunlight exposes everything and other cliches. So where's the CFO to tell us what's going on, Steve?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think people are trying to get that answer today.
Next.
I'm sorry.
What are you gonna say?
Do they all flip over those? Like, does the new CFO come in with Lori? Or?
Yeah, she can bring her own peeps. President Trump has given a full pardon to Conrad Black. It's a name you'll remember. Owned the Sun-Times for a period of time. A businessman that's been in business with Trump for a long time and also a convicted criminal. And he gets a full pardon.
Also wrote a really nice, glowing biography about Trump as well, right?
I think I would do the same thing if you pardon me. You pardon me, I'll write anything you want. So, of course, I've not been arrested yet. Next, Illinois food stamp recipients who are elderly, disabled, or homeless could soon use their benefits to eat at restaurants. The Restaurant Meals Program bill, which is awaiting a state Senate vote after approval by the House in late March, aims to add Illinois to a short list of states that have opted into a federal program that allows certain people to redeem food stamps for participating in restaurants. I have zero problem with this.
Oh, I think it's fabulous.
I think it's long overdue.
Yeah. Right. And the fact is, everybody that wants to go, now, you get food stamps, you go to the grocery store, you go home. No, that's ridiculous.
Some people don't have a home.
Right. Exactly, Stephen. I don't know why we still call them food stamps.
Well, I don't think we do. Isn't that the colloquial term?
And yeah.
It's the SNAP program. But having said that, there's nothing wrong with this because you are allocated a certain amount of stamp money, the SNAP money to spend. And when it's gone, then you got to do something else.
Yeah.
But there's no reason people shouldn't be allowed to go out to eat if that's what they choose to do. Next. This is a weird story. Ben Zobrist and his wife, Christian pop singer Juliana Zobrist, are getting a divorce. Juliana Zobrist filed in Cook County, Ben Zobrist in Tennessee, where they have an off-season home. Zobrist had been on a week-long leave in the middle of the season for this as things melted down. Internet sites, various credibility have reported that there was some improper marital conduct by Juliana Zobrist. But I've not seen anything that would verify that, and frankly, it's none of our business.
Correct.
I know she deleted a lot of photos off her Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Because he's a celebrity.
Right.
Yeah, they're both celebrities.
I get it because she's a celebrity, too. I do understand it. Joe Madden said, by the way, he is not sure when Ben Zobrist will rejoin the Cubs, and that's pretty much all he said about it. He said,
isn't it unusual for professional baseball players in the middle of a season who are going through a divorce to take time off?
Take a week off, yeah.
Yeah, that part of the story. Yeah.
That's the weird part, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Cubs are in a tough spot there because what do you do if the guy says, my head's not in it, you know?
Yeah, well, I think Addison is the one that's doing his work, isn't it, Dave? Isn't Addison Russell the one?
Man, he hit a home run yesterday.
Well, I mean, yeah, part of Zobrist, they brought Russell up when Zobrist took this latest leave.
What was the reaction when he first came up? Did he get booed?
Oh, he
got booed.
Zobrist, yeah. Addison Russell. Yeah.
What I more had a question is, and I don't know if does this happen a lot, where people both file for divorce in different states?
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to file a countersuit. It's a lawsuit, so you file. You know, you got to file a countersuit usually, especially if there's a lot of money involved. So, she a Christian pop singer. I don't know her work. Do you?
Oh yeah, he uses all her songs as his walk-up songs. Yeah. That's the only reason why.
And she's performed before some Cubs games.
Yeah,
done the national anthem.
Beautiful voice.
Yeah.
So he must be heartbroken. Wow.
Well, but again, we don't know, right? Two sides to every story. Okay. We don't know that I mean, who knows? Listen, a marriage comes apart for a million reasons. And whether there's another person involved or whatever, there's a reason that things came apart. And you don't know why. So it's very easy, based on the limited amount of knowledge we know, to judge that she went out and had an affair. We don't know that. We don't know that at all. Could be that Ben was upset because she took a flirty picture with a guy. I mean, you know, you don't know. I don't know Ben Zobrist. And again, I would just repeat something I think I said before. It's none of our damn business. Yeah, they're celebrities. I get why there's interest. But it's truly none of our business.
Amen.
Chicago accent has been inexplicably ranked among the sexiest in America. The Big 7 Travel surveyed 1.5 million social media followers and ranked accents from most attractive to least attractive. I can tell you right now, thick regional accents, I don't understand how any of them are attractive.
Hey, Ashland.
That's what I'm talking about. Number five, Chicago. Number four, Maine. You ever heard of Maine talk?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
lobster,
hot.
Lobster.
No, it's not attractive at all.
In New York? Are you kidding me? Hey, Gabby!
Yo.
Boston.
I love the Boston accent.
We take the car, park it over there. It's wicked cold.
We just watched an episode of Wahlburgers last night, and Mark Wahlberg's mom, she was taking an art class.
And number one, the Texas drawl.
I love that one too.
Oh, please.
Oh my gosh. I'll do anything if somebody has a Texas drawl and asks me to do something.
That
I'll do
one
it.
Or a British accent. Yeah. Right now, there's Texas the funny thing is, cowboys lining up to say hi.
Number 15 was the Midwest accent. And I don't know what differentiates the Chicago accent between the Midwest accent, how different they are. But
some blend of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois? I don't know. Well, Chicago's different than the Midwest accent. So. You know, at the whole thing again, I don't get it.
But you fall into...
I get why you and your team fall for a British accent or an Italian accent and all that. I don't get why. Australian. I don't get why any of those are attractive. So, if I hear a woman, as a matter of fact, a woman worked for me in New York. I mean, crazy beautiful woman. And she sounded like the nanny. I mean, it just as soon as her mouth opened, it was over. Yeah. And roll in a little New York to that. It's 6. I think guys process it differently, I guess. 6:22.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
He is Nick at night, to Julio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
How are you, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, I never see you anymore. I just...
I know.
Come here.
I miss you.
Come here. Give me a hug.
I miss you.
Get over here.
All right. All right. Hey, careful with the hands.
Sorry. You know me. I get a little handsy. Listen, I was much earlier than normal yesterday, and I was listening to you, and you were playing some Sophie B. Hawkins on Two for Tuesday, and you mentioned it was your dad's pick. I need an explanation.
Yeah. I'll give you my dad's direct line. I have no idea. My dad sent me an email requesting we do a Two for Tuesday for Bumps on Tuesday, obviously. And he said, I want to hear Sophie B. Hawkins. Damn, I wish I was your lover. And I got the chills.
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with that.
No, is it completely? And I don't think my dad doesn't even realize, like, what's wrong? It's a good song. My mom and I are going, what the hell are you talking about? What's wrong with you?
Very funny. He didn't bump his head, did he?
I'm sorry?
He didn't bump his head, did he? You know, where Fred Flintstone got hit with a bowling ball and his personality changed?
No. And he's not seeing Gazoo either, so he's good. All right,
before we talk about what your parents saw last weekend, am I the only one that doesn't get the whole John Wick thing? Seems like
I believe you are.
Every male in America is thrilled that Keanu Reeves has a new John Wick movie out, and I just don't get it.
Oh, Steve. Yeah, no, you're wrong.
Well, I haven't seen any of them, so my point is, sell me on it.
Well, what the hell is wrong? What are you talking about then? You got to see the John Wick movies. They're unbelievable.
Well, my point is, I wasn't drawn to see the first or the second. Now the third's out, and I just feel like I'm missing out.
You are missing out, man. What you need to do now is just stop doing the show, go home and watch all the two John Wick movies right now.
And tee up the third this weekend. Sell it to me. Give me the elevator pitch. Is this like sci-fi meets Die Hard or something, or what is it?
Oh, no, there's no sci-fi involved. John Wick was a professional killer, uh-huh. Got out of the business. Somebody killed his dog. He went nuts, and he kills 40 people every minute in all the movies.
Wow, sounds like my life story.
These movies are unbelievably brilliant action movies. The choreography, the shootouts, everything. It's you've seen The Matrix, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, take the best parts of The Matrix, like the shootouts, the fight scenes, double that, and then triple it, and then you get John Wick. It's the best. These movies are unbelievable. They're action movies. They are the top. They are the top pinnacle of action.
So is this the best Keanu Reeves movie?
Well, I'm still partial to The Matrix. Well, Point Break is my favorite Keanu Reeves movie. But
I love Point Break. I saw a display of it at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. They have a Point Break.
Yeah.
At MoMA?
And yep, they should.
They do, yeah.
Well, they should. It's a brilliant movie. That was, Catherine Bigelow directed that before she was the first female to win Best Director for The Hurt Locker at the Oscars. She's an amazing director. It's an amazing movie. But these John Wick movies are nonstop. It's just nonstop action. And they have, in this movie, parkour, where guys are jumping around on buildings?
Yeah, I do that too.
Okay. They have dogs doing that in this new one.
Okay.
I'm not kidding.
All right. Well, there you go. I don't know what to add to that other than okay. I got to see all three movie. John Wick movies by the next time we talk.
Oh, yeah. No, by tomorrow. I will say this. We were talking about John Wick. My mom is beside herself. That's the one we're seeing on Saturday.
Oh, she's very excited.
Beside herself for the John Wick movie. She's losing her mind.
Let me go to Vandeveld and Sandberg on this. What makes Keanu Reeves cute? He looks like just this oily, dirty old guy to me.
I think the dirtiness is part of the appeal.
Does that work for you, Vandeveld? Oh, I'm sorry. She's in conference.
Why do we spend all that time showering and stuff?
Yeah, and trying to smell good.
But it's kind of like Lenny Kravitz. They have that look that's a little dirty.
So it's okay if other guys are dirty, but the guy in your life better shower.
True.
A Dog's Journey. This is the sequel to The Dog's Journey that we already saw?
Well, yeah, it's a sequel to The Dog's Purpose. And it's about how it's another Dennis Quaid movie with a dog that has a voiceover, and the dog dies and comes back as another dog, and that dog dies and comes back as another dog.
Dog's Purpose. So why are we doing it again?
Because The Dog's Purpose made a lot of money.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what is The Sun is Also a Star?
Based on a bestseller, it's about these two people who meet, a woman and a man. They meet in New York City and have one full day of romance before she gets deported. The book sold a lot, and it's a big bestseller, and a lot of people, actually the reviews for this have been pretty good. Like, the two leads are kind of unknown, and apparently they give really strong performances in it.
I'm going to run out of time with Chuck Todd coming up. I know you and your parents saw The Hustle. Recommend it?
Oh, my God. Well, no.
Run in the other direction. Chicago Critics.
One of the worst movies I've seen all year.
Yeah, do The Hustle. Don't go see The Hustle. Chicago Critics Film Festival starts tomorrow at the Music Box. We'll talk more about that and hear Nick for that. And Ghostbusters is your next movie.
It is 35th anniversary, if you want to feel like Methuselah. The tickets are going pretty fast for this one. A lot of Ghostbusters fans out there. We're doing it Tuesday, June 11th. Go to the amctheaters.com. It's the big 35th anniversary. We're going to have a big party over at Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant right down the street celebrating Ghostbusters. So.
Means I was 23 when Ghostbusters came out. I bet I had some hair then. thank you, buddy.
All right, buddy. Take care.
That's Nick DiGelio. We're back with the headlines next, 720 WGN.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date's
wrong. May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest-running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Our friend Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, MTP Daily, the Chuck Todd cast, and coming soon, Chuck Todd on Ice, 6:44. And Chuck Todd, I found out a fun fact about you that I was unaware of.
Okay.
And that is that the Chuck Todd family has roots in Bloomington, Illinois.
Yes, yes.
where Mama was born in Bloomington, Illinois, raised in Grundy County, though, Morris, Illinois.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, no, I always say I grew up in Miami, but I was raised Midwestern.
Well, here's the thing: Miami and Bloomington are very similar,
very similar, as you know. Yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Miami normal, Bloomington normal, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
You have family there still?
I do not. It's where my grandfather is buried. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of family buried in Bloomington,
mm-hmm.
But I have some cousins still in and around Chicago, and plenty of cousins in Chicago.
What was the family business in Bloomington?
It was a men's store called Marvin's. They had a couple of locations, one in Bloomington, one in Morris. My grandfather and two of his brothers basically started it after the war. Grandfather fought in World War II, came back, met my grandmother at a temple social, and the rest is history.
Do we know if he had any game? Did Grandma ever say? Probably.
Actually, my grandfather's brother had game. He got into he played double-A baseball. My Uncle Marty played, I think it was double-A. Got that far. You know, light stick, good field.
Any reason your Nationals suck?
Yeah, I think what happens is just because you sit next to Joe Maddon doesn't mean you are Joe Maddon. I'm sorry. Here's the thing. I'm sure Davey Martinez will someday be a great manager.
I'm not so
sure.
But
the Nationals were basically a Ferrari 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And no matter how well you're prepared to drive a car, your first car perhaps ought to not be a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hand. And so, you know, I look, the ownership and the GM doesn't value managers. They think that and they're not the only team, right, that believes that the manager is nothing more than the person that implements your analytic strategy from above. But if you're going to be effective, you better get along with the players.
Right.
And he seems to not be able to get players to hold players accountable. I think he tries to be a little too well liked. But just because you're liked doesn't mean you're respected. I think that's Davey's problem. I think he's well-liked and not well-respected in that clubhouse.
You know, the car analogy is a good one, and I think we could make a blanket rule for MLB and for all sports. Your first team as a manager or a coach can't be anything more than an 84 Honda Civic.
I think that's right. That's right. Which which translated into baseball is the Kansas City Royals.
Well, they've become that, haven't they?
All
right, so a bunch of things to get to here, and the most important and the most concerning is what's going on in Iran. What do you know of what's going on in the White House? Isn't President Trump still in charge? Oh, God, I almost couldn't get the words out of my mouth. Or is the mustache going to get us in the war?
This is it. You know what I love about this, Cochran? This is a case where you're really hoping Trump is in charge on this one.
Isn't that weird? I actually am.
There's a whole bunch of folks going, oh, God, I hope Trump still is in charge. folks going to war. Look, this is the problem with the Trump White House, is that you do have a bunch of independent operators that move around and maneuver, and Trump lets that happen until all of a sudden he gets cornered into something. And I think Bolton, I think Venezuela has not gone the way Bolton promised, so that already was a problem in the Trump mindset. Trump does not want this idea that he is trying to somehow start a firefight with Iran is just not true. I think people around him are. I think there is certainly, and I say people around him, I'm talking about, I also think that the Saudis and UAE and Israel, they wouldn't mind the U.S.
Sure.
Toughening up and doing this. So I think there's certainly a lot of people that the president considers friendly to him putting a lot of this pressure on. But I think today's the day that sort of you could see that Trump was getting frustrated by all this saber rattling. The guy is not going to go on military adventures. He just isn't. I mean, I think the one he's been consistent on this. He's a very transactional guy. I believe him when he says he wants to negotiate with Iran.
Right.
I think he would sign the same deal that Obama did.
but he would call it his deal and say it's better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, some of this is just, some of his obsession on the Iran nuclear deal was just because Obama did it, right? You know, there's always been one of these things. He just wants to put his own name on it. I think Trump is in charge, and I think Bolton's mustache just got trimmed.
Yeah, well, we don't want war, period, because people are going to die. Having said that, we really don't want war with Iran or North Korea because they really would like to kill us. And Bolton has a certain amount of power, obviously, but does he have the power to create a problem that's going to lead to that?
Well, I think he certainly maneuvered our military resources in such a way that there's more prone for accidental confrontations, right? That the question is, you know, are we going to overread something? You know, will one run in, which does happen semi-frequently out there,
sure,
suddenly escalate faster than it should? But you know, I don't know. I sort of view today and view Trump's public pushback on both Bolton and Pompeo. I have a feeling we're ratcheting things down pretty quick. Look, Trump is a re-election guy. That's all he cares about, right? He's a re-elect. And I think he knows a military adventure in Iran will be unpopular.
Speaking of re-election, farmers coming out in mass now saying they're done. They were bamboozled. They voted for him. He's not standing up for him. He's killing him with his trade war stuff. This is a problem for him.
It could be. I mean, you know, I think that's the question. You know, I'll wait to see if I see it show up in polling. And if we, you know, we hear the same things, we talk to these farmers, they're saying they're upset. But then when you ask them, is it enough for them not to support the president? They're not there yet. So I think he is risking this. I think that just sending a congressional bailout, which is likely going to happen, right, to try to make up for some of the lost revenue, will probably help in about 80% of the cases politically for him. But I do think he's, you know, and he can't afford, you know, when he's putting together a campaign that is totally a base strategy. Well, if you do that, you can't afford any part of your base to be less than enthused. And if rural Midwest is kept a little more tepid on him this time than they were 4 years ago, that is a problem, right, on the margins. You know, he's still going to win these rural counties with probably 70 to 80% of the vote, but if turnout's a little bit down, if those voters just, you know, some of these farmers stay home as their protest, that to me is what he's got to be concerned about.
Several witnesses to AG Barr telling Nancy Pelosi, Ms. Speaker, did you bring the cuffs? Is this being overread as obnoxious as it is, or is he really that big a jerk?
I think he's that cocky. It's probably the way I would put it. And I think, you know, he really does remind me of sort of Dick Cheney's second run in Washington.
Right.
Right. You had the Secretary of Defense, or I guess you would make it his third run, right? Secretary of Defense Cheney was a guy who played by the rules, sort of, you know, all the stuff. Vice President Cheney was like, I know how this place operates, and I know it a hell of a lot better than everybody else around here. And there was that cocksureness to him, right? And for 5 or 6 years of that administration, you know, it felt like Cheney was the drill sergeant of Washington, and that he was just outmaneuvering anybody. Barr is coming in with that same cockiness. I've done this job before. I know what I'm doing. I'll roll these people. Please, none of this bothers me, blah, blah, blah. And I do think it comes across, you know, I don't think that was a smart move by Barr. I think it comes across the wrong way. And I think he risks, you know, making this a little more personal, and that's not a good look for anybody. But can I just tell you, I think the Democrats here, I think Nancy Pelosi has lost control of this. I think she's got to figure out, every day it's a spaghetti subpoena wall right now. I'm aware that the White House has successfully stonewalled and has made the Democrats put him into this position. But she needs to figure out how to sort of wrap her arms around this and say, all right, this is, you know, for the next 45 days, I want you to try to get this, this, and this. Our priority subpoenas are this, this, and this. And in 45 days, if we're not getting action, we're opening impeachment hearings. And you just say it.
Yeah.
And you just draw a line, take back control of this. But right now, she's letting 1,000 subpoenas bloom. right? Because politically, she's so nervous about, you know, this. There's no doubt. And I think the White House has exploited, essentially, her and the entire Democratic Party's hesitance on impeachment. And they know it. And they're daring. They're basically daring the Democrats to do it or daring the Democrats to back off. I think secretly they just want to, what the White House is hoping for is the Democrats just finally give up on the idea of impeachment. I don't think he wants it. And I think in some ways the whole taunting of them is to almost force the issue and force them to take it off.
Yeah, it's a setup. Listen, you're as good as you've ever been. And Pat Brady is here, and he's a native Bloomingtonian. And Pat, I think
maybe... I know. I ran into some friends of his.
Yeah, Mark Gibson.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah, I've got a Marvin's Leisure suit that I still wear.
It's a hot look for you.
Well, you know, I know your buddy said that Marvin's, you know, he always had the good husky clothes, you know, when he was a kid.
Pat's never been husky in his life.
Can I just tell you, when you're 5 years old and your grandfather gives you underwear, socks, and a suit for the holidays, so you're kind of disappointed you're not fired up about that.
Yeah.
So yes, I still have some Marvin's socks probably somewhere in this house, but it was not my favorite holiday gift as a 5 year old.
Right, as a little kid, sure, absolutely. but Pat, let's see if we can get some work done. You're a very powerful figure. Maybe get Chuck, because Chuck's got a lot of free time. Maybe get Chuck like a big parade in Bloomington where he's the guy.
We got Beer Nuts, Steak and Shake, Adley Stevenson, McLean Stevenson, Chuck Todd.
Take it right down Veterans Parkway.
We'll do right down Main Street there where Marvin's.
Oh, right into the city.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chuck Todd.
That was a standalone store. The Bloomington store was the bigger store.
Was it in the town square there?
Oh, you're testing me on this.
He didn't drive at five.
I think so. I just remember it was standalone.
Yeah.
The one in Morris was in the downtown next to, if I'm not mistaken.
So, and by the way, if this whole thing doesn't work out at NBC, you could always go back to that check. You know, to kick in the family business.
It was all of my grandfather's brothers. They were all sort of. They came over and they were all tailors at some point.
There you go. So, yeah. There you go. You're the black sheep. You went into politics.
And a big mistake.
Chuck Todd.
Journalism, not politics. Don't associate me with those politicians.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. The coverage of the same.
Yeah, no. I don't want to be associated with them.
Exactly right. That's completely fair, and I retract it. Meet the Press on Sunday. MTP Daily today, and the Chuck Todd cast. Thank you, my friend.
Steve, you missed what Nancy Pelosi's response was to William Barr yesterday. According to ABC News, Pelosi said the House Sergeant at Arms was present should an arrest be necessary.
Oh, good answer.
Yeah.
That's solid.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Check out the latest edition of the Steve Cochran Everything Podcast. Ross Cochran interviews me. Part two of the same. All the podcasts available. The Everything Podcast. WGNRadio.com/Cochran. All the Cochran stuff there. And check out the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio coming up in just a second. And then Rahm couldn't be looser. We'll play back the mayor from yesterday. Also coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
712, you can see all or hear all the podcasts. You can see some video podcasts, but you can hear all the podcasts at WGNRadio.com. And also, what's that fancy straight-up website situation we have?
WGNRadio/Cochran.
Oh, WGNRadio.com/Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. Before we get to Rahm, what's going on with you?
So you've been talking all this week about spoilers because you want to talk about the Veep final episode.
Yes.
And
Pat saw Veep.
Good news.
I don't want to just talk to Pat.
In the New York Times today, they cited a study in 2011 where psychologists found that spoilers actually enhance enjoyment. So they gave people short stories and they gave them spoilers, and the ones that had the spoilers enjoyed the story even more.
Who wants to be spoiled? So. Raise your hand if you want me to ruin Veep for you.
Please don't. I don't see it enhancing my enjoyment.
Oh, it would. Wouldn't you agree that everyone should know about this nonsense?
I thoroughly enjoyed the finale. Okay. In fact, I watched it and I watched it again.
Okay, I watched it twice too. B-A-N-A-N-A-S, Dave.
But close your ears. It's not for kids.
No. It's also not for your grandmother.
No.
Unless she's cool. Well, I like that study. See, there's some studies I just debunk because they don't agree with how
I think.
But
Gary Cole ended up pretty cool, too.
Yeah, you know what? I got a weird vibe from him, though.
Yeah, it was...
A good interview, but he was a little strange. Of course, how could he not be strange?
But he was strange in that character.
Yeah. Having said that, he's always welcome here. 7:13, Rahm Emanuel is one of those podcasts we talked about. The mayor visited yesterday in his last in-studio with me. You know what I said to him, Pat? I said to him, Mr. Mayor, got to be something in the office. Tchotchke, something. What are you going to take with you?
Two things. One, the alderman gave me the gavel that you use at the podium of city council.
The one you hit him with?
Well, in fact, there's a crack from one time I did get kind of a little. I got a little.
Well, that's kind of cool.
A middle Jewish child reaction. I don't know what happened. You know, as I said, middle children wrote a book, War or Peace. We do either one.
You decide. You decide.
Here's what got wheeled in. Folks that work for 2FM, which is Fleeton Facility. Mm-hmm. You know, they pull the podium off when we're about to cut a ribbon or whatever.
Sure.
They're all there. They're in the back. They're running the sound, etc.
Yeah.
They wheel in the mayoral podium. And it's handmade to my height.
Come on.
It's sitting in the office, and I'm taking it home.
Well, of course you are.
I'm putting it in the kitchen.
Are you going to address Amy with that?
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies. Lady. We'll go with ladies and gentlemen. Ladies, lady, couldn't you please, I'm talking.
Any advice you've given Lori Lightfoot, you can tell us?
I have this rule, which maybe I'm old school, like with the both presidents, you know. You got to give advice private. They got to know confidently. They can ask you, and you give it, you don't. I've written my note to her. I'm going to reread it, because I want to see if I want to change it.
You want me to proof it?
No, I'm okay with that. It's in English. You okay with that?
Oh, sure.
It has commas.
It's my second language.
Yeah. I will say, since that one will be the personal note, what I have left on the top under the glass, if she chooses to use the desk.
Sure. You know, didn't that make you think, what else is downstairs?
Steve, hold on. I'm in the middle of my story. I'm feeling good about myself. Don't do that. I'm hurt. I'm very hurt.
So I'm going to leave on the top.
This is very important because it's my favorite quote.
Okay, go ahead. I'll be over here.
That was dismissive. Try that again.
Go ahead. I'd like to hear more.
Okay. I'm going to leave on the top under the glass the Teddy Roosevelt quote about the man in the arena versus the critic on the sideline. And it's all about stumbling. It's about being the energy that comes from being in the arena, even if you stumble, rather than the timid souls who sit on the side. And in the lowest moments, and there'll be lows, there's great peaks in this job and there are great valleys. You have to look at that quote and remind yourself of why you're doing what you're doing and the energy that comes from it.
The majority.
And then I'll read a personal note for her in the drawer.
Now, listen, before you go,
I'm doing my risky business with my sunglasses here.
Yeah, and it looks good.
Okay. Yeah.
If we start playing old time rock and roll, though, keep your pants on.
Okay.
You're always welcome here, and I hope you'll continue to jump on with us occasionally.
Yeah.
Wow, is that a weak commitment? Yeah. I'm going to give you a last word in just a second. Aside from, you know, your appearances here on the show, I very much appreciate the access. I appreciate the honesty. Appreciate the laughs. And I appreciate everything you've done for the city. And while I know
you're not... I appreciate what you do.
Thank you. I think it's important for folks to get an opportunity to say thank you. And I assume the folks you're running in the street, a lot of folks are doing that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, thanks for your time. Thanks for your service.
One other thing. Don't get in a car with me. I haven't driven for 10 years from Chiefs.
Wow, I didn't think about that.
That's right. The bike is dangerous enough. Do not get in.
I didn't even think about that. Can you imagine? I think we should have an early Rahm warning system as soon as he starts driving again. He hasn't driven in 10 years.
I just want him to get a red light ticket.
That's very funny.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by MegaPros.
Using the internet
for fun.
Oh, sorry.
Get stuff done.
Oh, that's
now
right. Keep
it's
talking.
Time to move on.
I'll be over here when you're done.
Something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
Now? Using the internet for good and not evil, I present the most valuable person on the planet today as a lesson to all of us. India Jackson, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
More than 250 people donated over $8,500 so that India Jackson and your daughter Jewel Henry specifically could accept a NASA internship, right?
Yes.
So tell me where her interest in that came from.
Well, can you repeat the question?
You know what?
I didn't quite hear.
You know what, India, the thing we're reading is a little confusing. So you're the one that got the internship, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because you're working on your PhD in solar physics.
Yes.
Wow. I thought,
Oh, right. No, I know.
Jewel.
Yeah. No, right, mom is going to do go
so
work.
So your daughter's the baggage here.
Yeah.
right.
All right. So
right.
Where does your interest?
Joel is the one tagging along.
Got it. Where does your interest come from?
My interest in solar physics.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, you're not talking to a solar physicist here.
Right.
Well, my background is actually in mathematics. So I have 2 degrees in math from Georgia State University. And I got interested in solar physics because of a new interdisciplinary field called solar or astroinformatics. And that's where we use mathematical statistics, we use big data, we use computer programming in order to try and successfully predict solar flares and radiation belts for the astronauts that are at the International Space Station and the ones who are getting ready to go to Mars.
Very, very important thing, and I understood everything up to the point where you said, well, and then said all the other stuff. This is a big deal, and I'm sure your daughter is very proud of you. It's a 10-week internship, but you got to move there. So there's a lot of costs involved and other things. Who's the person that said, I'm going to do a GoFundMe page to help figure this out?
It was my cousin, Daisha. So, you know, I got my acceptance letter. I was ecstatic. I was happy. A few days later, I got the welcome packet, and then boom, travel and housing is on the student. So I was like, wow, okay. You know, this is actually not uncommon. Scientists always have to find their own funding, whether we write proposals or write grants. But my situation is a little different, you know. I have to worry about rent at home while
sure.
I'm there.
Right.
And then I also have a kid that I have to worry about, you know. So I was just ranting to my cousin about it, wasn't sure how I was going to get it done. I was considering not going, and then she was like, you know what, hold on for a second. And a few hours later, or maybe it was the next day, she said, I started this GoFundMe account for you. And I was like, do you really think that people would give to a complete stranger? And she was like, yes, I think people would give to your cause. And I was like, all right, well, go ahead and we'll put it up and we'll see what happened. And then it was just amazing. Within 24 hours, we had over the amount of what she was asking for, and I sort of cut it off.
And here's the thing. We all benefit from your experience here and your eventual work with NASA, because I have no doubt that that's going to turn out that way if you choose it to be so. So it's a nice thing. It's a very nice thing that people step up, because we all benefit from what you do and chasing your dream here. So I'm glad you had family to talk you into it and not give up.
Yes, my family is very close. I have a lot of family support.
Well, you're blessed. And you're also the most valuable person on the planet. Now, the next time you call, say stuff I understand. Thanks for being on. Hold the line.
What an incredible role model that young girl is growing up with.
How about that?
You have your mom. She has a double major in mathematics and then pursuing solar whatever.
She's going to be measuring solar flares and their impact on the atmosphere and also on astronauts, because solar flares, I don't want to bog you down with a bunch of scientific terms, but they're bright, shiny things.
Yeah, and radiation.
That can screw up my cell phone.
Radiation belts or whatever. Yeah. So, pretty impressive.
I remember my physics and chemistry teacher, Roland Ball, Mr. Ball. God, he hated me. Just couldn't stand me. Part of the reason is because I thought nothing was funnier than a Bunsen burner and tried to light things on fire in the room, you know, for the laugh. And in New York State, you have to take a thing called a Regents exam. And the Regents exam, you have to get at least a 65 to graduate from high school and go on to college. Well, I had really good standardized test scores, but if I hadn't passed the Regents, I wouldn't have been able to go any further. So generally speaking, by the way, kids, I don't recommend this. You know, I'd go to school and I'd do the morning announcements because it was my big break into show business. And then I'd go play golf. And then I'd come back, and I wasn't really adequately prepared for physics or for chemistry. So he thought somehow I wasn't applying myself. So he didn't like me much. And when the Regents exam came back and I got a 65, he literally took me aside. Imagine this happening today. He took me aside and said, let me tell you something, you little. And he called me a name. He said, I went over this test 4 times. I was hoping that there was a piece of punctuation out of place. I was hoping you misspelled your name. I was looking for 1 point. That's it. You're the luckiest kid on earth. And he had to pass me. So, and that's how I got into nuclear physics. It's 7:27. Hello to Eric Edelstein. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to see you. You look fantastic.
Thanks.
And you got a big
great too.
Got a big thing going on today? I mean, not that you don't look great every day.
I appreciate it, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just, you know,
Just another day at work.
I come in here every week, and Pat's usually got, you know, he's dappered up. He's got the pocket square and the...
True story.
He's just always looking like just right out of a men's magazine.
Right, so, and so you felt I had to keep up.
I had to keep up.
And for those of you watching on the stream, you can see why.
This isn't going to one of those I love you man things, is it?
No.
I heard that segment on Tuesday.
Well, I don't understand why that made you uncomfortable. I love you and Eric. I love you, Eric.
It's like a bromance.
Wow, neither one of you can say it, huh?
No, I love you. I love you. Love you.
It's like transactional on that. I love you. Once I got bounced from the golf outing, you're off the I love you list.
It's the Fonzie, right? I love you.
nothing like grown men to really bog down emotion. 728. We'll come back, get your headlines in a second, and then Pat and Eric will tell you if anything's happening in Springfield. And we'll have more of the comedy stylings of Attorney General Robert Barr. But he's going to be funny when he's in jail. And all coming up after this on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
And at 741, we continue. Eric Edelstein's here. Pat Brady's here. And why don't you tell us where you work, fellas?
I work at AL Media.
Next Generation Strategies.
Now, you guys have both fielded candidates forever, big portion of your careers. The businesses for both of you have changed a little bit, but you could answer this question. How many damn Democrats do we need running for president? I believe we're at 22 now.
I know I've said this on the show before, but it's that old line, the way we should pick a president is everybody who wants the job should be disqualified.
Right.
And we should pick from the rest of the population.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point because the Australian Prime Minister's race is coming to a close with a vote. There is a law that mandates how long you can campaign. I think it's 38 days from announcement to actual election.
Right.
Can you imagine how great that would be?
Yeah.
Not great for your business necessarily.
Yeah, right. No, I understand. I thought, you know, the Israelis, elections are limited that way. I think there's some other European countries that do it that way. We are in the sort of permanent campaign in this country.
Yeah, because it used to be just the House.
Right.
The minute you got elected to the House, you'd start campaigning.
Right.
Senate, you had 6 years. White House, you had four. So usually it was after the midterms. Now everybody's campaigning.
Right. And we never got a break here because we went right to the mayor race.
That's right. And I'll tell you, from our perspective, again, it is good for business. I'm not complaining. But it is a phenomenon I've seen over the 20 years I've been doing this.
That has gotten worse?
Well, there used to be a break after an election. You know, everything kind of quieted down. People kind of relaxed. They weren't starting to think about the next election.
The debates start in 3 weeks.
I know. The debates in this presidential. So, you know, the day after an election, these, particularly after 2016, I mean, everyone was fired up. It wasn't sort of like this great exhale. It was more sort of like to your battle stations, and people started talking about running and taking it on. So it's a permanent campaign in this country.
If Trump were to get reelected, hold on, something in my throat. If Trump were to get reelected, it would be crucial for the Democrats to control the Senate. They're 5 seats short. You've got, I believe, 6 or 7 senators running now, all that could be in competitive situations, none of which are polling at particularly high numbers outside of Kamala Harris. Wouldn't it make sense for those senators to go, thanks for the exposure, I'm going to go back and win the Senate?
I think you will see some of them dropping back. I think there's hope that Hickenlooper ends up running in Colorado.
Kirsten Gillibrand?
You know, well, her seat's not up right now in New York. But
next year, though, right?
No, she's not a...
Oh, I thought she was up.
No, no. Okay. So it's more like Bullock in Montana could run a good race. You know, obviously the Georgia situation. So I think you'll see some of these folks dropping back. There's still time before filing and all that kind of stuff. But
Pat, how do you do a debate? You just did a debate in the mayoral race. How do you do a debate with 22 candidates? Do you run out Soldier Field?
Well, in my infinite wisdom, we, from our debate, took 5 people and excluded the candidate that actually won.
So you're saying I'm asking the wrong guy?
I saw Lori after the election, Mayor. I go, hey, sorry about that debate thing. We're still.
Well, the idea being, though, if you are one of the sponsors of the debates, the major debates, you can't put 22 people on
stage.
No,
they're dividing it up over 2 nights. So the way the DNC...
We can't do 11 on 11.
I know. Well, they're doing 20. It's going to be 10 and 10, so some people are going to get excluded.
That's a moderator's nightmare.
Oh, my
gosh.
We
did. The Republicans did that last time. We had the B-team
debate. Yeah, it worked out zero.
It let Chris Christie stay in, though, because it gave him an audience that he wouldn't have gotten in the main stage.
I mean, I just in this moment where everything is spectacle, I see that Saturday Night Live skit where people are just, someone's lighting their hair on fire,
right.
Someone else is juggling,
pay attention,
and someone else is doing, like, gymnastics tricks. Like, how do you stand out in a field of 10?
Well, tier it out. Who's the top tier right now, top 5?
Yeah, well, I would say the top tier is certainly Biden,
Sanders, Kamala, Warren, and Buttigieg.
Kamala did an interview on Jake Tapper. She's pretty impressive.
She's very impressive. And Warren, you know, is kind of, she's kind of moved up slowly by putting out a lot of this very detailed policy. And
yeah, that worked for Hillary.
Well, but I mean, she has a belief system, and I'm not saying Hillary doesn't, but a very, you know, a view of the world, which makes her kind of polarizing. A lot of people don't like it, but I think there's a strong feeling, particularly in the Democratic electorate, that she stands for some things that people really care about.
Now, the Democrats have to decide at some point that they're either going to go way left or somewhere in the middle, or kind of left and come back to the middle. Where is that going to go?
You know, I no disrespect, Steve, to that opinion. I think there is a bit of a media obsession over this ideological
split. Don't you call me media.
I know. You know, I've seen a lot of data among Democratic primary voters. They just want to win.
It's like 2000 for us.
And they want somebody who's going to get stuff done. They don't really care how you label them. Are they far left? Are they far right? Now, the one problem, I've said it on the show, and I'm not afraid to talk about it, is we can't nominate a socialist, someone who says they're socialist. Because part of the Republican narrative, we're already seeing it in Georgia. North Carolina. There's a special election. The primary was Tuesday. They're already, Dan McCready's the Democrat, Marine, born again. I mean, he could be a Republican if he were in a lot of other states. They're already saying, oh, you're like Ocasio-Cortez and a socialist. And like, that's their playbook, right?
But you know, that's really never worked for us very well.
I know, but they're trying it.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm just saying, if we nominate Bernie Sanders, it doesn't really take spin to say the Democrats.
Right.
Hey, let me... I agree. But I was going to ask you this, if Steve would let me run a show for a second. If this is a personality contest, you win. If it's on some of the issues, like you're saying, the far left stuff, you lose. You agree with that? Personality, I mean, if it's all about Trump and his Trumpisms.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I think... We all know that if this were a normal presidency and you had the economic numbers that you're looking at right now, he'd be a huge favorite. But because of his personality and because he's such a horrible human being and he's so disruptive and dysfunctional to this country, you know, it's going to be a close race. So
100 million people didn't vote in 2016. 100 million people. The vote was decided over the course of three states by about 78,000 to 80,000 votes, somewhere in that number. What are the chances if the Democrats pick the wrong candidate that people are going to stay home? In other words, I'm not voting for Trump, but I got no reason to go vote for that person.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always the risk of that. Although I do believe having a robust primary, I know we're joking about it and all that, I don't think that's a detriment. I think you end up with a strong nominee. I really do. And, you know, Obama...
your organization's going, too.
Yeah, Obama was better for having to go through a multi-candidate field and then having to beat...
He won Iowa and then went and lost in New Hampshire.
That's right. Yeah. And just the battle of that primary season made him a tougher candidate in the fall.
The only reason it didn't work for us last time is Trump got all the media attention.
Right.
He was on when other people could never get momentum because Trump was on every second because they thought he was going to say something outrageous.
So here's what really matters because, as you know, and we know, the presidential race is the beauty contest, and that's great, and that's the one everybody's focused on. But your school board race, your local race, your reps race, your state race, and certainly your national senator and House member, they're way more important than the president because they affect every day. If we have no rule of law, and the party in power, by controlling the executive branch and one branch of the House, decides they don't have to stick to the rules, we don't have any rules. So isn't the Senate race next year way more important than anything else with the lead that the Democrats already have in the House?
Yeah, I think it's critical for the Democrats, but I don't think the map actually squares up for them that well in the Senate. I mean, that's a jump ball where it probably, given what's going on, shouldn't be. But I know where you're going with the rule of law, not honoring the subpoenas and things. And I agree with you completely. We're a nation of laws. But the political reality is I don't think people in the process arguments really pay that much attention. I think this is a process argument.
But the problem with the process argument is I don't care. You know, and I think the public that's engaged goes, because the difference now is, candidates were always concerned about getting reelected for the entire history of this country. But they never said it out loud, and they never tweeted it as much as they do now. You just want to smack them and go, you know, people, you said that with your voice so people could hear. Do you have any interest in doing the job you were elected to do? And more people than ever in my lifetime certainly have no shame in saying, this is all about me keeping a job.
Right. You know, we're doing... got hired by a guy named Jamie Harrison, who's running against Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. And so I've been looking at a lot of Lindsey Graham tape and the hypocrisy.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, he's the worst. Of how critical he was of Trump, and now he's his best buddy. And
what did he say about? He said something. You have the quote. I'm drawing a blank on it right now. It's really like he's totally incompetent or crazy.
Unfit to serve a crazy person. The way to make America great is to make Donald Trump go away. You know, I mean, he doesn't.
And you can take all of the Clinton speech and not use Clinton's name and apply it to everything Trump does now, and he's just completely.
And he said he's unfit to serve. He doesn't represent my party. He doesn't represent this country. All this stuff. And now he's like, he's the greatest president of all time. And they say to him, well, why do you do this? He goes, well, because I want to get reelected. Like, just blatant, just puts it out
there. It's just outrageous.
You know, we had Tom Dart in the first Lincoln Forum. I think you were there, Eric. And he got his biggest applause line was, and he said, we all need to start viewing these offices as we should not care if we ever get reelected.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, there's got to be you guys have said this forever. There's got to be a price to pay for behavior that's bad, whether you're a little kid or an elected representative. And unless the public holds these people to account, that you can't be a hypocrite and you can't say it's just about me. Here's Lindsey Graham from the Clinton impeachment era. Listen.
This is about a person out of control who took the law, turned it upside down. Every time there was a crossroads, he put his personal and legal interest ahead of the nation. He's the chief law enforcement officer of the land. He encouraged people to lie for him. He lied. I think he obstructed justice. I think there's a compelling case that he has, in fact, engaged in conduct that would be better for him to leave office than stay in office.
How can that...
I ran into
How does
him.
Lindsey Graham look in the mirror?
I ran into Senator Graham, and he told me he was just kidding on that.
I'm telling you right now. I know we're gonna have time till the 2020 South Carolina race. It's a tough race, but I'm gonna put my marker down now. It's one people are in this country are gonna pay attention
to. If you can take that race and make that, I'm very familiar with South Carolina. Yeah. Make that close. The year the Democrats are gonna have is gonna be off the chart.
But here's the other thing.
Arizona's played.
You gotta bring up not today, but there's the clip of Trump in the 2017 election doing like a takedown of Graham.
Mm-hmm.
After he had, you know, he goes, this guy, Lindsey Graham, he's polling at 6. He comes after me. He's at 0. He just eviscerates him as a human being.
Is that when he gave out his phone number?
It was after that.
Okay.
Yeah, that he gave out his phone number. But, you know, it's just Lindsey Graham's the worst of politics.
Yeah.
You know, in his defense, kind of like me and Steve Cochran, he plays golf with him. And that
makes everything okay.
That makes everything better.
Actually, it doesn't, because Eric plays golf as well.
Yeah.
We come back. Pat will try to explain what's going on in Springfield, what we thought would get done, and what will actually get done in a moment.
When Rod arrived in 1990, as Jim just said, there was this very svelte and dynamic deputy attorney general, who I'm sure served as an inspiration for you over the years. Now, in those days, the deputy job was a lot different. But I'll tell you now, the attorney general job was a lot different. Also.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The obnoxiousness, Pat, you talked about it, and Chuck Todd did, the cockiness. It's just outrageous. You're the attorney frickin' general. And if you want to be a jerk behind closed doors, go ahead. But to do it in public?
Yeah, but he personalized it, too, which I think is a mistake. When you get into the personal attack, especially with a strong woman
and
like
part of me that would hope he'd be hit by a Washington, D.C. city bus, but I got nothing against the bus. All right, so Springfield, update, please.
A lot going on into the last 2 weeks. Haven't seen a budget yet. Working on the big gaming bill, capital bill maybe, legalizing marijuana, maybe an energy bill. So a lot of stuff out there, but nothing has gotten through yet.
Is the governor still well thought of in regards to working together? How's Mr. Durkin feel about it? What's going on with the parties?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. But I think all in all, okay. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what actually gets done. He had a pretty aggressive agenda, all the things I just mentioned. But I think if he gets a budget done, which is balanced, and the good news and the lucky news for him, they found $1.5 billion in extra revenues in April, which pretty much closes the budget hole. So his big thing, which I forgot to mention, the fair tax,
I think Jim Durkin's response, the House Republican leader, was great. Why, if we found the money, why do we need to change the tax code when the whole argument was that that's going to fill the budget hole? So we'll see. But I'm not sure how he – be interesting to see what Eric thinks about how his legacy in the first year is viewed if he doesn't get – a lot more things done.
Look, I think we'll know, as you said, in the next 2 weeks, and obviously the tone gets set in the first year, as it did with Rauner. I just think the tone overall to this point is a relief for most people in Illinois of just there isn't this just kind of infighting. And the thing we saw for the 4 years of Rauner and Madigan fighting was voters just saying, can't they just get along and get something done? Now, again, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but at least there isn't this sort of public catfight that's going on that everyone just shakes their head and say, grow up.
And the governor could be pitching his statement here and pushing things forward, but he's chosen not to and stays in Springfield. And I would highly encourage the governor to step up and answer some questions. Nice to see you, Pat. Good luck at yoga class today, and you look very pretty. Eric, thanks for coming in as always.
Thanks for having me.
I'm not sure how to respond to that, Steve. But
thank you. Would it be appropriate, I would think?
Next week, I'll be back with a response. Thank you.
The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's where we're going next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey.
Dean Richards joins us live from Channel 9. It's more on entertainment time.
Woohoo!
It's got to be the highlight of your day. I know it's mine.
It is the highlight of my week.
So I got a really nice gift from, I'm told, Bill and Wendy. They were apparently cleaning out their office, and they gave me a poster on all the incredible movies. Well, not entirely true. On one of the incredible movies made by the actor Steve Cochran, who my mother had a crush on and whom I was named after.
Hmm.
This is the same Steve Cochran who died at the age of 48 off the coast of Southern California.
It's a mysterious, still unsolved death, I think, right?
He had three Mexican girls with him, 14, 19, and 25. They didn't know how to operate the boat. They didn't speak English. The boat eventually drifted back to shore, but his dead body was on board, they think, 10 days.
Hmm.
So there was an investigation. No foul play was found, but he lived a very, very tumultuous life, had some addiction issues, and you're thinking, wow, it sounds like somebody your mom should name a baby after. I was also handed along with this really cool poster about one of Steve Cochran's movies, all the different ways he died in the movies he was in, because he was a good-looking dude and he died. And I'll just run through a couple of these for you, because it's reading that I'll be doing, again, wondering why I was named after him. A movie called The Chase, he was killed by a train.
Nice.
A movie called White Heat, he was killed by James Cagney. He was then killed again by a train in a movie called Highway 301. Different train, I'm told. He was killed by the mob in a movie called The Damn Don't Cry. He was killed by the KKK in a movie called Storm Warning. Killed by a dog.
Is that a movie about meteorology?
Yeah, it may have been. Tom Skilling was in it.
Meteorology. White supremacy.
They rhyme. A movie called Back to God's Country. He was killed by a dog bite. He was thrown off a Ferris wheel in a movie called Carnival Story to his death. He was murdered by his mom in Slander. He was killed by falling off a building in El Grito. Killed by a hit-and-run driver in The Twilight Zone. And then Elliot Ness killed him twice in The Untouchables. And then in a movie called Purple Gang.
Hmm.
Actually, the movies are Purple Gang and 90 Proof Dame. I mean, my namesake knew how to die.
I can see why your mom, you know, so he got this new baby. And what shall we name the baby? What shall we name the baby? I know that guy that dies all the time.
And the one that was found with hookers.
Found with hookers. I was just reading his story of his death. It's quite gruesome.
And I'm holding up the poster if you're watching on the stream. It's the damnest love story yet, says the Baltimore News American. It's Steve Cochran's unusual legacy, says someone named Dorothy Manners. It's Tell Me in the Sunlight, starring Steve Cochran, Sherry Marshall, Jay Robinson, and George Hopkins. Nope, nobody's heard of him. And it says no one under 18, please, because this is long before they rated movies. Huh? Is that exciting?
Cochran, a dashing romantic figure on the Hollywood scene.
Now you're reading from the WGN website now, right?
Well, I'm reading... from the death notice of this guy, a dashing romantic figure on the Hollywood scene's body was found in an advanced state of decomposition.
Mm-hmm. It had to be entirely unpleasant for the three hookers on board.
So, Dean, every time we talk about Steve Cochran, the other actor, because mm-hmm. Steve Cochran that's in studio is also an actor, right. I always like to look up and look at images. And in my search of looking for the other Steve Cochran, I've just found something on Historic Images. We can buy, for $9, a press photo, Steve Cochran, American actor, from your Q95.5 days.
Yeah, man. Q95.
Well, look at that.
Look at that. Look at that.
How much
face.
Is that?
$9.
I wouldn't pay $9 for that
picture. $9 for a headshot.
I bet I got 200 of those in my basement.
It says, Steve Cochran was an American film, television, and stage actor, son of California lumberman. He graduated from the University of Wyoming in 1939.
Looks like somebody's confused.
After a stint of working at a cow puncher.
Yeah, well, that was me. I was a cow puncher.
You developed your acting skills, and you progressed onto Broadway film and television.
I did admit to Sandberg yesterday, off the air, that I am the laziest actor in show business because I haven't done anything since the early 90s. So, I really don't deserve even a consideration for an Academy Award anymore, Dean.
That other Steve Cochran, though, super handsome.
Yeah. Well, what
Dean,
am I, Chopped Liver?
I'm going to send you a caption of...
Steve Cochran starred in Chopped Liver.
There's a picture of him, hunky and bare-chested.
Yeah, he's a good-looking dude.
As it's listed here.
I think that was a thing. My mom had a thing for him. Which makes it even weirder that she named her son after him. The whole thing is dark. All right, here's what's coming up. The Stones...
Taking pictures without a shirt on.
Yeah, you're talking about you like that.
I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
Hunky and bare-chested?
Yep.
He's awful
By the
hairy.
Way, Dean, and specifically because he enjoys the art of it, Dean has a whole series of clowns with no shirts on. So.
What did you say, Mayor?
Said he's awful hairy.
He is hairy.
Yeah. So. A little too much for me.
That was another movie he was in, Awful Harry. He was killed in that, too.
That was the prequel to Dirty Harry.
The Rolling Stones reschedule. Britney Spears in the news. That's a weird story. You're going to have to explain this whole Britney Spears thing to me. Paris Hilton in the news. And Dean has puppies. Congratulations on
Thank
that.
You.
How do
Thank
you feel?
You. I feel a little sore, but I'm okay.
8:19, all that coming up.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
By the way, Dean, for your amusement, you and I always get separately together. Wow, you look like Billy Joel.
Right.
And not the young, sexy Billy Joel.
No.
The older, nearly dead Billy Joel.
No, the one that looks like he just hit another tree with his car.
So guess what I got yesterday?
Hmm.
Anybody ever tell you look like Hector Elizondo?
What?
I said, you're the only one that's ever said that. Hector Elizondo played Tim Allen's boss on Last Man Standing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that show's back on.
He's been in a lot of movies,
and he's
too.
A character actor. Been around right. forever. What was the Richard Gere, Julia Roberts? A Pretty Woman. He was the guy at the hotel using a hairpiece.
Yeah.
Do I look like Hector Elizondo?
No.
Okay, just for the record, for those of you who are, possible future, you look like all bald people. Just because you're bald, it does not mean you look like another bald person.
Yeah, they're baldest.
Well, the thing Hector has going on that is similar is your goatee area is the same color as his little right. beard area, yeah. too. So you're bald and you have the facial hair.
Yeah.
Dean doesn't have that. Dean's
his eyes are
face.
A little more alert than mine.
Yeah.
At 8:24, can you explain this Britney Spears thing to me?
Yeah. The Britney Spears manager is now saying that it's possible that she may never perform again. He issued a statement yesterday to TMZ saying that she is physically and mentally exhausted and that she's wiped out and that they've canceled her Las Vegas residency now because of the... complete breakdown, physical and what he's calling emotional breakdown of it all because of financial situations, because of her father's serious illness. He said that she is not going to be continuing to perform anytime soon, and she may never perform again because of her fragile condition right now.
Is this a bipolar disorder that we haven't heard about? Because these kind of, you know, huge behavioral swings and destructive behaviors certainly fall into that category.
Sure sounds like it to me. I mean, nobody has said that ever. That's never been issued, but it sure has that written all over it.
Well, it's a sad deal.
Very much. Yeah, very much so.
Paris Hilton. Now, you know what? Don't do that one yet, because that's a bad transition. Let's instead go to the Rolling Stones, because everybody saw Mick Jagger dancing yesterday.
Everybody saw him dancing yesterday. He issued, put out this video yesterday post his heart valve surgery. And really, after I saw this yesterday, I went out and signed up to get a heart valve replacement, because I want to be able to do, I want to be able to move like Jagger.
Right. Of course you do, because I'm telling you right now, all of us should have valve surgery if you can move like that.
Yeah. So I signed us both up. I hope you don't mind that.
I'm in.
I know they have couples massages. I don't know if they have couples
well, you remember,
heart valve surgeries, but I thought it would be fun if we went together.
Well, you remember when I was an actor before I was lazy and Untamed Heart, that was about a heart valve.
Oh,
that was a Christian
so
Slater got heart surgery.
Experience with this.
Yeah.
So Jagger has the heart valve replacement surgery. He puts out this video yesterday, and he's dancing like you would. Like you would never know that he's 75 years old. And they canceled the No Filter tour when he went down with the heart surgery a month ago. Today they have opened up the concert tour again, and the tour now will open here in Chicago Friday, June 21st, and Tuesday, June 25th will be the two dates. Now, those are the original two dates that they were going to perform here anyway. So if you had tickets for those shows, your tickets are still good. They will be honored. If there is some problem, you can go back to your point of purchase and figure it all out. But the Stones are back up and running again, and it's all going to start at Soldier Field.
Wait, and did you say 21st and 25th?
That's correct.
So they need, 4 days to recover in between, I suppose. Because that's weird, isn't it, that they're not together? The dates?
Oh, the two dates? Yeah,
yeah.
It is kind of. Well, there could be dates. Something going on at Soldier Field, maybe, right? That is causing the split.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Mary's probably right that they probably want to rest for a few days in between the shows.
Days. Yeah. I know Timberlake did days in between his concert, too, so maybe for everybody involved.
Well, they'll be hanging around Chicago maybe then.
Yeah.
Or maybe they have another one in between in Indiana or something.
A lot of times they do that where
private shows
where they'll be based.
Yeah.
They'll be based in one place and then just, you know, jet off someplace and come back. Sometimes they
and don't be surprised if you're over at Grand Park and you see Mick and Keith taking tourist pictures by the Bean.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to stalk them. I want to find out what hotel they're at.
I didn't know he was 75.
He's on the
74. That is, it says 75 on the wiki.
Yeah.
And that's what Dean says.
75.
So.
Yep.
That's crazy. I think, you know, sometimes they take those, like Steve might be hosting one of those parties at his house in Naperville.
Mm-hmm.
And
have
Mick
Jagger
comes,
show up.
Yeah, where you pay ungodly amount.
Do it, Steve.
Well, let me be honest with you. The whole band staying with me. They couldn't get a hotel. We lost a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer?
We did. We lost the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and a Chicagoan on top of it. One of the original members of the Dells has passed away, Charles Barkdale. The Dells had hits like "Oh What a Night" and "Stay in My Corner." Not that one. Not that. "Oh What a Night." This was
there's had more of a Yiddish bent. It was "Oh What a Night."
Oy, it was originally called "Oy What a Night," and they goyed it up a little bit,
right?
That you're thinking December 1963
right.
In parentheses.
Right.
Oh, what
Four Seasons.
Yeah. This was an old, almost doo-wop-y kind of sound, and as was their sound, very R&B, very doo-wop-y. They started off performing together at Thornton High School in Harvey, and went on to top the charts. Were inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame in 2004. Charles Barkdale was their bass singer in the group. Had a phenomenal voice. Reportedly has been in failing health the last few months, and passed away in the south suburbs yesterday, 84 years old.
The Paris Hilton story.
Okay, so we haven't heard from... I was funny that this should come out today, because I was just thinking about Paris Hilton the other day, that we hadn't heard anything from her. Remember when she was in the news like every day?
Sure. Well, she begat Kim Kardashian to some extent,
She did. It was her and Nicole Richie. What was that show?
Simple Life.
Simple Life.
Was just a meme 2 days ago that said, remember when life was just simpler?
Yeah,
there you go.
Right, maybe I saw that, and that's what made me think of that.
Probably.
That they were in the news all the time for no particular reason. Paris Hilton was on Watch What Happens Live on Andy Cohen's show. He asked her to say three nice things about Lindsay Lohan. And what she said was that she is lame and embarrassing and beyond lame and embarrassing.
Isn't Paris Hilton about 51 now? I mean, how old is she? Because that sounds like something a 14-year-old would say.
It does sound a little bit like that, but...
She's 38.
Okay, 51.
Yep, close.
38 seems a little old to be going, oh, God, she's so lame.
She's so lame and embarrassing, and beyond lame and embarrassing.
That's even worse than regular lame and embarrassing.
Lohan is 32.
Spokesman for Lohan says, obviously Paris needs to feel relevant right now.
Wow. Imagine Lindsay Lohan being the high-roaded one in that. And you and your puppies.
So yesterday we had the Anti-Cruelty Society bring by six little husky puppies. Mm-hmm. I don't mean like husky. I mean that's the breed.
They didn't need like bigger jeans.
They didn't
during
shop
back to school time.
They didn't shop at the same store that you and I did when we were kids in the husky section of Sears. These are actual husky puppies.
Okay.
Adorable. 6 weeks old. They brought six of them here yesterday because this new movie, this Dennis Quaid movie that's coming out this weekend called A Dog's Journey, called me and said we will pay for adoption fees for dogs if we could do a little something on the air.
So smart.
I said, oh, well, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, that's smart.
So they brought all these cute little puppies. We set up a little a pen, like a wire pen in the studio. And I got into the pen with all the puppies, and they were climbing all
over
me.
At great risk to you, we might add.
And, you know, they're licking me. They were...
I mean, you're lucky to be alive.
Chewing on my finger.
Were they biting you and snipping at you?
They were biting and snipping with their little puppy teeth and their little puppy claws. But I toughed it out. I almost took home four of them yesterday. They were so adorable. But this movie company is going to pay all the adoption fees. If you want to see these puppies, you will be sold in an instant because they're so cute. They're on my Facebook page. But if you contact anticrueltysociety.org and say you're interested in these puppies that were on WGN, you have to qualify. They have to make sure that you're a proper adoptive family. And the movie company for this film, A Dog's Journey, will pick up the tab on it all.
There's
cool.
No way that there's any left. Those, I'm not even into dogs, and they were the cutest things I've ever seen.
How can you not be into dogs?
There's the hair, the bite. Everything you described is what I don't want to have happen to me.
Well, you know how they developed an anti-allergenic breed of dogs?
Yeah. All those doodles.
Yeah, if they develop a breed of dog that picks up its own poop, I'm in.
There you go.
I love dogs. I had dogs my whole life, but I can't do it. I can't do the pickup. I can't.
If you love the dogs enough, you would.
Yeah, it's not that bad, Steve. Mm.
That's why Dave will be at my house following me around.
No, I won't pick up you
in your older days. So.
How many dogs do you have?
No, I don't mean
Dean.
Picking up for me. No, I meant my dog.
Dean, how many dogs do you currently have right now?
I don't have any dogs
right
now.
You don't like it either.
I would love to have a dog. I miss not having a dog.
If I wasn't out of town so much, I would have definitely gotten one of these dogs yesterday. But I'm out of town too much. I don't want to get a dog and then not be there to take care of the dog. I might get hire people to walk the dog, feed the dog, and
that's why he doesn't have a clown at the house. Because if he left and left the clown home, imagine who's going to feed and water him.
If you can't take care of your own clown. Then don't get a clown.
Especially when he comes to life.
Oh, they're lively. Thank you, buddy.
See you.
That's Dean Richards back in a moment with your headlines and much more to do on a Steve Cochran show. Not any Steve Cochran show, this one on 720 WGN.
You voted for this president.
Yes.
Regrets?
Yes.
Larry Engler adds up the money he expects to lose this year.
Between me and my daughter together, probably $100,000 to $150,000.
Did you vote for Trump?
I did. I'll never vote for him again.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. If I could turn
back time. Which is one of the farmers that's coming out speaking publicly. Angry with the president over the trade wars and the impact of the soybeans in particular on farmers. So we'll keep an eye on that, amongst other things, today. Later today, the president has a press conference at 1:30 our time where he will release details on his immigration plan, which has a lot of things in it that I completely agree with. Yeah, that's right.
has one glaring thing that's not in it, though.
That would be the Dreamers?
The DACA kids are not in this bill at all.
You cannot have an immigration plan without allowing the Dreamers to stay in this country. It's not their fault. They didn't do anything. They only know this country. You can't send them somewhere else.
Does the plan say they have to leave, or it doesn't address them at all?
Oh, they'd have to leave. This plan doesn't say anything, but they would have to leave unless they're granted the ability to stay.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders this morning said the reason they're not in there is because all of the past bills that had them in there failed, and so they don't want them in there because they don't want this to fail.
I love Washington logic. It's tremendous. Listen, I want to try to save the world one bad behavior at a time. And there's a couple things that have come up. And, you know, we always do a stop and start with this. And basically, it involves technology and how we handle the new world, the technological world in which we all live, and little things we could do to make our lives easier. Before I tell you specifically my complaint, here's things that happen all the time. Let's say I call Dave. If I call Dave and the call drops for whatever reason, and by the way, it's rare that that happens anymore because cell technology is pretty good. But if I call Dave and the call drops, Dave, whose responsibility is it to call back so you don't get in the I called you, you called me zone?
I think as soon as you realize the call has dropped, whoever realizes it, dials the number back.
But how do you know? What if you both?
It doesn't matter. I mean,
it doesn't, because then here's what happens.
Okay,
you call me while I'm calling you.
Get voicemail.
Now we both get voicemail.
Not necessarily.
So, but it's very much
that's how quickly you can call. You can push redial.
Here is the answer.
Okay.
To this world problem.
Please,
the caller is responsible to call back. Not you. I called you. Call drop. Doesn't matter if it's your fault or my fault. Who knows? But it's my responsibility to call you back. I call you back. We're not calling each other. You answer the phone. You tell me don't call again. Or whatever our conversation is about. So can we all agree, 312-981-7200, that that's a rule we should adopt in life in 2019?
No. Let me throw something at you. What if you call me and you finish your reason for calling me? You're done with it.
And the call drops?
And I'm like, hey, man, I'm glad you called. And I start talking to you about something that you had not planned on talking to me about.
Here's,
then the call drops. Are you still saying that it's your job to call me back? Because you're done with the call.
I think if we make this a blanket rule, we can all live with the benefits of it, even if you're yammering on about something I have no interest in. I call you back until there's a collective agreement that the conversation is over. Dave, I'm going to need you to sign up for this.
First of all, I don't see Joe as yammering on. I think that was uncalled for.
Dave, I think you're getting bogged down in details that are part of the discussion, to be honest with you.
We had this happen the other night. We're talking to my son. The call dropped. We called each other back. I don't know who got through first.
Was it an hour? Hour and a half before you eventually connected because you're each calling each other?
It was about 15 seconds.
My dad and I always, at the junction on the Edens, you know, there used to be a bad cell there, and our call would always drop. And then my dad would, we'd call each other back, and then he would go into my voicemail and say, hey, honey, it's me. You don't need to call me back. But then I had a voicemail I had to check, and it was all the time. Leaving me that voicemail.
It's a waste of time for both parties.
You know what's even worse than that? So my mom still has a landline with no call waiting or voicemail on it. So when this happens to us and she doesn't call me back immediately, I call her and I get a busy signal.
Oh.
For 15 minutes before.
That's actually, it's kind of cool, though, to hear the busy signal. I haven't heard it in a long time. All right, so everyone except Dave is on board with this?
I'm calling you right now, Steve.
Yeah? Well, I can't really take the call right now. I'm a little busy.
Okay.
I do see that you're calling, however. Can I sign you, Steve, up for this? You're the one calling back?
Absolutely.
All right, Mary Vandeveld, are you in?
Wait, whoever has the worst reception should call back. But how do you know who's got the bad? Because I always know if I'm talking, who you're talking to, if you're on like Lower Wacker or whatever.
You don't?
You don't know if I have bad reception? Yeah. Well, usually you talk about that.
Okay, why can't you, the caller, or me, the caller, be the person that calls back? Why can't that be a simple rule?
Sometimes you don't remember who called who.
I think that.
Okay, I can't speak to the general problem of aging.
And here's another thing. When did you become this big advocate of rules?
Oh, wait, there's more.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's more.
More?
Yeah, there's more. We're no longer allowed in 2019 to say, yeah, I never got your email. Yeah, you did. You got the email. Nobody doesn't get an email in 2019. Now, you may not see it.
Well, you could say it went into spam.
You may have missed it. Oh, but you got it. You got it.
But could it be in spam and nobody looks at their spam?
Well, whose fault is that? You can't say you didn't get an email because email is delivered.
I don't say that. I say, I'm sorry, I didn't see the email.
Well, that's different,
isn't
it?
Didn't check my email.
That's a completely different scenario.
And sometimes they misspell my name, and I really don't get it. And then when I talk to the person and say, hey, this, did you send it to the
right
name?
Well, Grzanich is tough.
Yeah, and again, that doesn't apply to this either, because if it's a misspelled email, you literally didn't get it. So you have to... I'm talking about using it as an excuse.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say, I didn't see your email as an excuse for not reading your email. How do I know this? I really don't check my email nearly enough.
Right. I didn't feel like responding to you is what you really should say to people.
Now, this last one I have a problem with because I don't know how to figure this one out. 312-981-7200.
Well, what's the problem?
Texters or phone calls. I have someone who asked me to help them with a small business venture, and it's fine. Not a big deal. Doesn't take much of my time. It's not a big deal. However, this person is now traveling. And they got a hold of me and said, because there's some people we need to contact in regard to this. And it's his business venture. It's not mine. He said, would you contact these people because I'm out of town? Now, at what point does being out of town mean you can't contact people? This, again, is the technological world you live in. You know what it reminded me of? You know the commercials that are going on now where somebody goes, hey, you know where I could get a contractor? And they go, well, give me 3 estimates and get back to me. It's not up to me to get this deal done.
No, unless you're getting some cash.
Yeah, unless he's employing you now.
Or unless there's an understanding that I'm taking this on. Why would it be? The assumption is you're busier than I am. And by the way, in most cases with me, that would be true. The assumption is that you've got more to do than me, so why don't I just take this ball and run with it? So, point being, if you agree to take on a responsibility, don't pass it on to someone else because, and this again is a very specific rule, if you're out of town, it doesn't mean you can't contact people. This is not 1961. This is 2019. You have the same email and the same internet and the same text messaging and the same phones. You can make the call. You can send a text. You can send an email.
In some places, you can't get cell phone service.
Yeah. He's not on the moon.
No. And then what
you
about
could be
time?
In the North Woods of Wisconsin. Sometimes we don't get cell phone
What if you're
service
in a different
a
time zone, Steve?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You can contact them.
If you're on top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
If you're in a different time zone, do the math.
Well, some people, though, do like when they're off, they like to be off.
Yeah, like Friday nights, I turn my phone off now and I don't pick it up again until Saturday.
There should not be an assumption that someone else will do this for you simply because you're out of town. If you're out of town, don't use out of town as an excuse that I can't pick up my part of the duty.
Yeah.
Right?
John Williams filled in for you a couple weeks ago when he was driving Joe and I nuts because we were trying to contact him and he doesn't answer anything until Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and the weird part is he asked me to call him. 312-981-7200. You'd like to add a technological rule to fix the world? 312-981-7200.
And can we thank Bona Beef? They just dropped off some beef, Steve Grzanich, so we've got beef sandwiches here. This Saturday, they have the first ever Italian Beef 5K. You can go to ChicagoBeef5K.com for details. It kicks off at Montrose Harbor at 9 a.m. And you can enjoy Italian sausages halfway through the race and then Bona or Al's Italian beef sandwich once they finish the race. So Italian Beef is supporting JDRF, the leading global organization for funding type 1 diabetes research. Next Saturday, May 25th, Bona is offering half-price beef sandwiches at all its locations to celebrate the 5th annual National Italian Beef Day. So we've got beef in the house. And you can do a beef 5K.
Okay, now here's the thing. I haven't run regularly in, quite a long time. Does that sound like something a runner would do? Stop and have a hot beef sandwich or a big sausage?
Sausages halfway through the 5K. So what's that, about 1.7 miles in down a sausage?
I mean, we're not talking about a marathon here. We're talking about a 5K.
They have those cool shirts now that have, like, the pocket in front of them, the running shirts.
That's right. Michael showed us those.
Yeah, so you can put stuff in there. You can put your, like, number down there and then your sausage as well.
Can't you just eat it later? Save it for later?
You get kind of hungry.
You get hungry, yeah.
No.
All right, I'm just checking.
Okay. I did it afterward.
Yeah, well, you got the beef after. So anyway, that'll be a fun 5K, a meat-filled 5K. Yeah,
well, and thank you, Bono Beef.
Yeah.
Texter's chiming in now, and thank you for doing that. Being out of town only counts if it means you're out of the country and being chased by a pack of deranged squirrels. I agree. Then you can ask me to do the work that wasn't my work to begin with. 815, I have a rule. My phone is for my convenience, not yours. So in other words, don't make my phone more inconvenient for you. Right, that's fair. Another rule drives me crazy these days when people think that a text message suffices for a birthday message or a happy Mother's Day or a message of condolence. Pick up the damn phone, people.
There is something to that, but mm-hmm. there are also exceptions, I think.
Yeah.
Just
people that you're not exceptionally close to.
Not necessarily. If you want to convey a message quickly...
And, well, no, if you're super close to somebody.
Well, that's different. I'm not.
it's stressing Dave out.
if you just chosen to not agree with me on all things, are you cranky because the whiskey's not in yet? Is that the story? Let's see. And by the way, hi, Anna DeVlantis, who joins us.
Hi, guys.
Nice to see you, as always. Our rule, if it's a multiple party email or text, reply back to all so everyone knows what's going on.
I got to disagree with that.
Yeah, what's the reply all thing? Because if you reply all on something I really don't care that much about to begin with, I'm getting a lot of emails I don't need.
Yeah, you're tapping out, right? Ryan Burrow, one of our newsmen, got an award this weekend, and we are all copied on the email, which is awesome. But then everybody replied all in the congratulations, and it's like, that was not necessary.
Not me. I wrote right back to Ryan.
Yeah, so
that's the way to do it.
I actually tracked Ryan down and said, I don't want to email you. Congratulations.
You're getting too much attention. I'm just going to stay out.
Right. Texter says, don't assume that emails have been received. There's one particular company referenced here, and emails drop all the time. Yeah, you know, it's very rare. It's very rare.
Super rare. It's not even, it doesn't even feel right. If for some reason it does happen and you use it as an excuse, I think most people are like, what?
It's a ditch. I guess what I'd say to you is come up with a better excuse. You know, work a little harder.
Spam folder? Does that count?
Yeah. People need to accept the fact that you can't always respond immediately. Oh, this is a good one. We know someone, and I don't want to say who, but it's Pete McMurray. And Pete McMurray always gets very sensitive if we don't respond to his text within about 4 seconds. People need to accept the fact that you can't always respond immediately to a text or a phone call, your job, driving, doctor's office, or times you don't hear it or can't because of the noise. That's the thing about texting, right? Because you could be texting something that's really important to you at the moment, but maybe the phone's not in your hand. Or maybe you're actually doing something on the other end. So don't assume the worst until the worst has been confirmed. Oh, you were blowing me off. Oh, well, that's different then.
But what period of time is it a blow off? Like, how long gets to pass before you're not responding?
I think because everybody has their phone now, I think a couple of hours max. After a couple of hours, you're either blowing it off or you've been injured. So I believe we've learned something here, and that's what's really important. 312-981-7200.
Never call Steve.
I know. He's got very strict rules.
I'm just trying to help the world. If you call me and the phone drops, why wouldn't it be up to you to call me back? You call me, the phone drops, you call me back as opposed to me calling you, and we both end up in each other's voicemail.
Mary's point is so right, though. If you can clearly tell that you are the offending party, that you're walking on Lord Wacker, or you are in some kind of a weird situation, it's your responsibility to call back.
But here's the deal. You don't want to hear from me. I think that's what we're getting down to. And you don't like my mother. It's 9:03. We'll come back with the news next on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, Steve Cochran Show, and hi to my friend Anna DeVlantis.
Hello, good morning. Happy
nice
Thursday.
To see you. You and I were talking about something off the air. I can't believe I missed this story. Now, let's do a little backtracking here.
Right.
When you were, was it Channel 5 or Fox?
5. I was at 5.
5, you did a documentary on sharks, and you came in one day to me, and you said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to swim with some sharks at Shedd Aquarium with our old friend Roger German. And I said, no, you're not, because that's a terrible idea. And then you explained to me the myths of sharks.
Right. Their necessary role in the ecosystem, picking
right.
off the weak and dying fish. And
the movie Jaws made it all worse for them.
And it did, and we've never recovered as a species because of 300-plus species of sharks, and you think about the fear, the irrational fear we have of them, three times more likely to get struck by, or thousands of times more likely to get struck by lightning than you would be ever, ever, ever to be touched in any way by a shark. Most of them are afraid of you. And we tried to, like...
And they can't see, right?
Well, no, some of them have very good vision.
Oh, they do?
Some of them very good. They can see at night.
Like the ones with the glasses? Because here's the thing. I consider you my own personal oceanographer.
I'm not sure about that. I do have a deep concern about our oceans and lakes. And
but you know, you've taken the time to know this stuff. So you brought up a story that not only did I miss, and I can't miss stories.
You rarely do.
That everybody has missed because nobody's talking about. It's a hugely important story. And it is.
It is. Well, it's one of those things where we have so much going on in our news cycles that often important stories just sort of, they pop up in your news feed, but you just don't have the time and it doesn't get that much attention. The Mariana Trench, the deepest known point of the ocean, the part that's 35,000 plus feet under the ocean's
surface.
That's
7 miles, by the way.
7 miles, good math. And it was just explored. A manned mission went deeper than ever before. And what they found was remarkable. They took all kinds of samples. They found microbes down there that are the foundations for human life, for sea life.
And but species, I'm sure we never knew existed.
Exactly. They've discovered shrimp and eel that they think are new to our radar. So they're looking into that. And then they found, a plastic bag, like a jewel bag. And they found plastic particles. And they're examining certain sea creatures to see if they're going to find what they find in most marine life now, which are pieces of plastic in their stomachs.
Well, this is the thing that's crazy to me, because the pressures at that depth are incredible.
Which is why they haven't been able to explore the Mariana Trench too much. In the 60s, they went down there first. Then you saw James Cameron, the director, movie director, went down there on a mission in 2012. Yeah. Extremely expensive to fund these things. So they're often privately funded. And this one was too.
And for that reason, my thought is, well, logically, plastic couldn't survive. It would be disintegrated. It would be pulverized. Not so.
It's all over our oceans, which is when you hear about straw bans or how to dispose of your plastic bags and things like that. You know, it matters. They make their way into our waterways, into our lakes and oceans. And it's really having a detrimental effect on marine life. There's no question about
it. It's a huge deal.
I was in California kayaking, and I saw a little seal.
You know, you could have flown.
Well, I didn't kayak all the way there, Steve. I actually flew,
I was confused.
Then got in a kayak in that order. And I saw a little sea lion that had a plastic, like what you put on a Coke six-pack around its neck. And it was this little neck was expanding. And I called the Marine Service, the Wildlife Rescue Service. But I'm hoping they catch this sea lion, and I'm hoping they're able to save him. But you just see the impact now, and we just can't ignore it.
And what do we know? Do we know that ships just dump this stuff, or
is
it
getting in there through our garbage and through us disposing of things in bad ways? And it, you know, gets into our. When you look at Lake Michigan, you know, you see the debris and the things that don't belong there. When I've taken dives in Lake Michigan, you see on the bottom of the lake that there are things that don't belong there. A lot of garbage, and the fish eat those little particles. They eat that kind of thing. It gets in their systems and works its way up through the entire system.
And for Gabby and Abigail Grace and everybody.
Think about that, right? It matters.
Yeah.
It matters.
They deserve clean oceans, clean lakes, and fresh
water. Drinking water.
And we know that a fresh supply of drinking water is one of the major problems on the planet.
So just stuff to keep on your radar. Good story to check out, because it's really remarkable what they were able to discover if you want to take a look at that, but then also a little disturbing in terms of humanity's impact on our ocean.
But here's an example of something you ought to share, socially and otherwise, so more people are aware of it, because it missed the news cycle.
True.
At 9:20, next to you is a guy named Michael Heidemann. I don't know if you've met Michael. Michael, each week, while there's time, is able to assemble a lot of crap on the internet. And he then brings it to us, stuff we could buy that we didn't know we could buy. And then maybe a GoFundMe page or two as well, which you would never contribute to. So we'll come back, do that in a second. I think it's possible. Jeff Bezos is at my house last night. Just walked in. He's sitting there at the table.
Start business as strange as they can be. Stupid, silly product on Amazon and QVC. Heidemann does the research, finding things you didn't know. A service you get only on the Steve Cochran Show.
Because we care. With Anna DeVlantis, Michael Heidemann joins us now. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's interesting to be on a show where we can talk about things that we find on the ocean, and now things that I find on the internet.
Right. Crap in the ocean, crap on the internet. Right.
Exactly.
Right. And Michael, I think really after meeting your mom last week for the Mother's Day show, that this is what she dreamed of. That you'd be working on a huge show like this and looking up stuff on the internet that we can mock.
Mm-hmm. She said when I was young, in my baby book, she wrote, one day you'll be on the Steve Cochran show talking about things that you find on Amazon.
We have a Kickstarter effort, and this is the PGA Championship weekend. What is this golf product?
Yes, I thought with it coming up, and I know that you're a huge fan of golf, and everyone here on the show is, we can talk about the Shotty Golf Tee. And yes, that's correct. It's the only way to shotgun a beer while golfing. It's manufactured in the U.S.
You take a can of beer, you flip it on its side, you pierce it with a tee device, which also is sort of a makeshift straw that you can then shotgun the beer.
Yes, exactly. What every kid wants, and more. Only for $175 that you can pledge. It's a Kickstarter, so they're just trying to fund it still. With that $175 pledge, you get 50 Shotty golf tees, a golf towel, and 5 Shotty koozies, so you can, you know, keep your drink nice and cold.
Now, Steve, you wouldn't use the tee as a straw. That's not really how the shotgunning goes. You'd remove the tee and then open the can, and then you shotgun
also,
through the hole.
This is a hacker's move. I mean, come on. But having said that, 50 tees seems like a lot because 50 tees is 50 beers. So apparently they're trying to make alcoholics as well. This is part of the program.
You know what? I think that those golf carts are there for a reason, or those the drink carts that come out are there for a reason. Mm-hmm. I think that that's probably an afternoon. Right?
Well, 50 in an afternoon. I've certainly played with guys who have done that. Anna, have you played golf lately?
I really haven't. You know, since
do you still
being
find
mother,
it stupid?
I just haven't spent much. No, I've always loved golf. I thought it was fun. Just to, you know, makes you get outside.
How
makes
come we
you
never
talk
played?
Well, I played in your tournament, but I didn't play with you in the foursome.
Well, I mean, you have to say it like that. I didn't play with you.
Well, I'm not sure you allowed me to play with you. I'm certainly at a different level than you are. I get that part.
That's not true. Well, we should play if you want to play.
All right.
Great. We, you know,
I'm up for it again.
Get out in the, what did you say? Get out in the wilderness? What was it?
Get out in the, like, in the nature. In nature. Right.
All right.
Grass.
So, next up, cats.
Yes, speaking of nature, we have the Citizens Advertising Takeover Service, which is a great Kickstarter, or as I like to call it, CATS, CATS, which is trying to take over certain, let's say, L stations around England to show just cat photos. And in fact, if you wanted to, for just $100, your cat could be featured, and they'll reserve a little square for your cat, and if you send them a photo, or for $1, they'll stroke a cat for you.
What does that mean?
They'll pet the kitty. You know, there's Marie Kondo.
683 people have chimed into this.
That's right. I think that this is probably one of my favorite Kickstarters because I would actually fund this as much as I can.
But the cats really need promotion? I mean, don't we have enough cats?
Well, I think it's to keep you from having to look at ads.
Mm-hmm.
So the cat pictures cover up the ad pictures. What if you're not a cat person? What if you'd like to see, you know...
Yeah, this freaks me out.
Cute kids or something.
Dogs.
Or dogs.
Right?
Right.
See, very cute.
Dogs would work. Yep.
Dogs would work.
Or mix it up. Or like the last couple of times you were in, you brought us pictures of old people doing things.
Oh, you just wait.
Just wait.
You just wait.
Oh, it's coming? Okay, I didn't look ahead. So you can sign up for that as well. All right, what's the sheep wagon?
So, Steve, it's summer. There's a lot of vacations.
And by the way, this is not a Kickstarter. This is an Airbnb.
Yes, we're moving on. I've expanded the segment a little bit.
Has everybody done an Airbnb?
I have.
I have not. I have not either.
I had a good experience. So, you know.
No, we did a VRBO.
Is that same thing?
Same thing.
Vacation rental by owner.
So, Dave, you haven't done
an
Airbnb?
As opposed to an Airbnb, which is by stranger?
I'm not sure the difference.
I have not done Airbnb.
All right, so let's say you had a feel for the Old West and you really loved Little House on the Prairie. Is that where we're going here?
Exactly. For any kid who grew up in the 1980s, the Oregon Trail was one of my favorite games. You played on the floppy disk, and not only...
That was the only game.
I think it was.
Wasn't it one of the first games?
And it always froze.
Yep. It always froze. It was that and Hangman, I believe, were the only two games that you could play. And this is a fully restored 1920s sheep wagon for only $125 a night.
Sheep sold separately? Is that where we are with this?
Yes, for this one, I suppose. It's actually, you know, this is the best part because like the Oregon Trail, you can rent this Airbnb and it doesn't give you dysentery and you don't need to forage the river. which is amazing.
That's very good. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, does anyone want dysentery? I don't know anybody no. that's up for dysentery. No.
Well, Cindy from wherever she's from in June, she stayed there and she said, if you're the adventuring type and you appreciate getting away from the hustle and bustle, the Hayward Sheep Herder Wagon is for you. Situated in the vast open fields next to a meandering river and a beautiful lake, you can really feel the earth speaking to you.
Where is
sheep
it?
Wagon. I think it's in Oregon.
Now,
like,
Anna,
for real.
Michael has mm-hmm. had sort of, you know, I'm going to go as far as to say a fetish for pictures of old people, giant life-size wall decal pictures of old people.
Oh.
One was two old people in a golf cart. What was the one last week?
That was a park bench, too. Wasn't
oh, yeah. Old people
a park
on a bench.
There was the woman with the inhaler.
What's the appeal, yeah, Michael? Inhaler. What do you love about it?
Well, you know, I'm trying to remodel my apartment, and I know that Ben Wakenight is trying to do some stuff with his apartment. And I went to IKEA the other day, and there was nothing as cool as this wall decal of a senior woman holding a tray of muffins.
His argument last time, Anna, was that when you walk into an apartment, if you saw this decal on the wall in the living room, you would laugh.
Okay, that's
and you
fun.
Would laugh. So I think that's if you're trying to set a mood.
Either that or you're weird.
You know, well, Marie Kondo, she's the cleanup
organizer.
She says to spark joy. Well, I look to spark confusion and bewilderment with this.
All right. Well, I think you're well on your way. We're only going to have time for one more, and then you're going to save these others for us. And this one's important because napping, I'm a big fan. Big fan of the nap.
Love the nap.
Except this product that is available, is this an Amazon product as well?
This is an Amazon product.
It's called the Sleep Hood. And I swear to God, Anna, you look at this picture, it looks like you're taking a hostage.
It totally looks like a hostage photo.
Oh, there's a fan on top of the head. Look at that. There's a fan. I see it. Oh, you could sleep in meetings.
Yeah.
It's like a bag they put over your head and it shuts out all the light.
It shuts out all the light. It's almost
the
perfect...
But have you ever seen anything less subtle? Of course you're taking a nap. You're the hostage. You're sleeping.
They're wearing it on the ski lift, even.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you got to just take a nap. In fact, Dave J. gave it 5 out of 5 stars. It says, it's better than Ambien, discreet naps, and great for the workplace. And he's finally became the master of his domain with this.
Let me tell you something. Everybody on this show is getting one of these bad boys.
It's not that discreet, really.
It's a
hood over your head.
It's literally a bag over your head that you, a guy sleeping on a park bench, take a nap anywhere, anytime, only for $7.99.
Now, having said this, the way I feel about meetings, I'd prefer to be a hostage. So
we should wear them all during the CLTV hour.
Right?
Can we maybe save the last two for another day?
Yep. That's what I agree.
Here?
I agree.
Cool.
In the interest of time, because we got to get to Walter. Nice work, Michael, as always.
Thank you, Steve.
And by that, I mean, I don't know what you do around here.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
It's time now to drink. And this is not something that just happens on Fridays on the Rokan Show.
Oh, we're doing the Carnival Wagon on Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. Sort of weird.
The Carnival Wagon, the oddly named festivities that go on every Friday.
Every Friday.
Well, we don't normally do it on this show, but occasionally we do. And I have a designated drinker, as you know, I have Dave. But for you to step in, because, you know, I don't really drink. I drink occasionally.
Yeah, I'm helping you out.
Yes. And we have an expert on whiskey in the room with a great whiskey. And I think the founder may be on the phone. Samberg, what's this whiskey?
This is the Uncle Nearest whiskey. And, we have Ian in studio. He's our ambassador for Uncle Nearest.
And Fawn is the founder?
Yeah, and Fawn is the founder, and she's on the phone. But Ian's the one that brought the whiskey, so we might like him better than Fawn.
Yeah, that's a tough break for you, Fawn.
I don't mind. I like whoever has the whiskey better, too.
So, again, you've told the story on the show before, but how did this come about, the whiskey?
The whiskey came about because there were some really important people who wanted to see the story told and shared, and for Nearest Green's name to live on a bottle, and those people were mainly Nearest Green's descendants. And I read an article in the New York Times while I was in Singapore. I wasn't even in the country when I read it, and it was fascinating to me that it was possible, based on the article, that there was an African-American man who was at the forefront of Tennessee whiskey, premium Tennessee whiskey, and was the teacher of Jack Daniel and the mentor of Jack Daniel. And I wanted to learn more about it. The New York Times article, unfortunately, like a lot of press, didn't have the ability to really dive in and research it. So the writer, the journalist, essentially, as he has shared with me, was lobbing it up in hopes that someone would be so struck by the story that they'd actually dive in and do the research. And that person just happened to be me.
And by the way, just for the sake of those that aren't following the timeline here, the oddity of an African-American being in any kind of meaningful business, let alone starting a foundational business of whiskey in Tennessee, that's the crazy part, right?
Oh, it's absolutely insane.
Because what year are we talking about?
We're talking about 1856.
Yeah, about that.
And going all the way through about 1884. So you're talking about a period of time during that time, right? So he would have not been actually free as an African American. He was not a free man until December 6, 1865. So you've got a 9-year window there where he's not even a free man. But still perfecting this process and becoming known for this amazing whiskey coming out of Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Give him the website, and then we'll talk to Ian, who will tell us how to drink.
Absolutely. It is Uncle Nearest. It's NEAREST, UncleNearest.com.
And where do we get it in Chicago?
Oh, Harry carries Gibson's Italia, carries at Smith & Malinsky and a few other places. And then there's some, 2 barrels are on their way to local retailers, is what I'm told.
Is that right?
Well,
they don't get hijacked.
It is sold at all Benny's. And Benny's also has our first 2 single barrels that came into the market. And then there are, I don't know that there's 2 on its way, but I know that there have been requests for more than one, but I believe I've approved one.
Well, knowing that you have a friend in town who is involved in it, there's a guy named Larry. There may be 4 yes. barrels on the way. That's what I'm saying. So, thank you, Fawn.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you allowing me to join.
Of course. Ian, let's talk to you. What are you, Ian? I mean, as far as talent and skill goes in this area?
I'm the district sales manager for Chicago.
Okay.
I started with Uncle Nearest back in December. But before that, I had been distributing it, and that's how they found me.
Okay. And what do you know from whiskey? How do we know you're an expert?
Well, I got into whiskey because I wanted to get a master's degree, so I started working in bars and restaurants.
And you thought getting drunk would be the best way to get a master's?
I figured. It'll help me cope, for sure. But I went back into the world of whiskey and actually started working for a local distiller. And I got to get my hands in a lot of different aspects of the business. I was representing the brand to consumers. I was working with the brand in front of accounts and getting it into the accounts. I was working in the distillery. I was working in production.
So you know your stuff.
Yeah, I got to really dive into it.
And there's a way to drink this, much like there's a way to drink wine. And you don't have to be intimidated by it. And Ian's going to teach us in just a second. I told a sensitive, lovely story off the air about how my grandmother used to give us, like, tumblers, water glasses. I remember I was 7 years old. She gave me, like, probably 4 ounces of whiskey to cure a cold. Ooh. And I remember waking up on the floor.
As you would.
So maybe you weren't so lucky to have your grandmother giving you hooch at 7. But in this case, teach us how to drink Uncle Nestor's.
Okay. Uncle Nearest.
What
you have here.
Uncle Nestor's. By the way, don't get Uncle Nestor's. It's just awful.
Yeah, please don't. Uncle Nearest. Uncle Nearest, what you have in your glasses are 1820. This is our single barrel.
Okay.
And this is U.S. 10. That's the barrel denomination. And it is 110 proof. So it's a high proof. Mm-hmm. Our 1856, which is our flagship, that's also
a good thing to
proof.
Hit at 6 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. A little drowsing?
You know what? Proof is flavor, though. And at the end of the day, if you see a high proof whiskey, it's not going to be bad if it's a good whiskey.
Huh.
If it's a good spirit, high proof is only going to add flavor.
I didn't know that.
Proof and alcohol by volume are different, correct?
Different and the same. It's like saying Celsius versus Fahrenheit.
So well, that's interesting. I didn't know any of that.
Oh,
you've
so
already
it's a different
us
figure, but they
different
mean
figure,
the same.
Mean the math. Same thing.
Okay. All right. So if a sommelier, a cocky sommelier at a fine Chicago restaurant brings over wine, we're supposed to stick our nose in it. We're supposed to swirl it around. We're supposed to check it for color. Is whiskey different?
It is different because wine has a lot more sugar and water content.
Okay.
And whiskey is mostly ethanol. So that's one reason why.
So I could pour this in the car.
Yeah, please do. No, please don't. Drink it.
But if you smell it, it can burn your nose sometimes.
Yeah. So with wine, you want to get real close. With whiskey, I would always say take about a finger's width from the glass, so from your nose, and always smell with your lips slightly parted.
Really? What's that do?
It allows the
vapor. Sexy, Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
It's a lot sexier.
Sorry. Shocking. I didn't know that. All right. Then what?
It allows the whiskey, the vapors, to just kind of hit the back of your tongue, your taste buds.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And you smell more of it.
All right.
And everything that I do when I teach people how to taste, it's to warn their body that they're about to consume ethanol. So when you take your sip, I always say just coat your tongue and gently swallow. Doesn't have to hold it there. You don't have to swish it around. You just want to coat your tongue and gently swallow so you're not hitting the back of your throat.
Don't splash it in. Are you joining us in this, Anna?
I am. I was trying to play along as you said that, and it made a difference that you didn't, because the back of your throat is what I find burns. Like, I can't really do whiskey and scotch often because it makes that sensation.
You're drinking 110 proof whiskey. That's not going to not have a sensation to
drink.
It. Right? So the whole point of that
did
is...
Did you drink the whole thing?
Yeah.
No, you weren't supposed to do it like a
what?
Shot.
I've got to talk.
You're supposed to coat your tongue.
I coated my tongue and the rest
and
of my brain.
That's not right.
This is very fine.
That was
whiskey.
For grandma.
That's kind of the point. So when you take it in like that, when you shoot it back there, it's going to hit those soft tissues in your throat, and your throat's going to shut down, and your brain's going to say...
So in other words, for me, great idea.
Yeah. Great idea.
Yeah.
Your brain's going to shut that down and
kill the money maker.
This doesn't taste good. Get this out
it's
of me.
It's going to be a fun post-show meeting.
Take a nice, easy sip. That nice, easy sip is going to be a lot easier to taste and handle, and your body's going to be prepared.
But if I'm at Miss Kitty's Saloon, don't I want to pound it so I look like a tough cowboy?
No. Do you want to look like a tough cowboy? I feel like the day of the tough cowboy
is gone.
Miss
Kitty's you do.
Yeah.
And then slam it on the counter there.
Right.
Dave,
and find out
think?
How many bits I owe the bar.
Yeah, Dave, what
is
it?
Very smooth.
It is smooth.
Great. Really smooth.
I was telling Ian off the air, I usually drink scotch, and so whiskey isn't, you know, so far away from that family.
No. And Sandberg, you both drank it?
Yeah.
I literally didn't see you drink it.
I coated my tongue.
Because I passed
tiniest,
out.
I took the tiniest sip because I wanted to enjoy
the flavor.
They were
delicate about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is super smooth, and it's a high proof, and that high proof is great because it adds more flavor. Higher proof, less water. And that's what we're going with our 1856, and that's what we're doing with our 1820. We want the most flavor possible.
And by the way, if you're wondering what you compare this with, I'd suggest Advil.
There you go.
The following day.
I don't. I, just as like as a brand rep, I don't suggest Advil.
No. It's fantastic. Add Benny's.
At Benny's, 1820 at Benny's.
And website?
UncleNearest.com.
All right. And again, Uncle Nestor tried to work for Uncle Nearest. He wouldn't take him.
No.
Great
really
to meet
good.
You, Ian.
Thank you so much for having
great
me.
Great job, by the way. You're a great spokesperson.
Oh, thank you so much.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Yeah, good news is, Dave, that I don't feel any different at all.
No, you look great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Pounding that whiskey turned out to be a fine thing.
Exactly.
You notice how the rest of us...
You're pretty. What's your name? Check out the latest edition of the Steve Cochran Everything podcast. Go to WGNRadio.com/Cochran. Use the WGN Radio app. Ross Cochran interviews me. He'd be so proud. And you can hear him there. This is an anniversary for Bill and I. I know you remember. This is the anniversary of the first time on the show that you portrayed one of the great characters of all time, the multiple choice psychic.
Abe Basidi,
the multiple choice psychic. Let me explain how it would work. Welcome, Mr. Basidi. Appreciate you being here. Are you getting anything from me at all?
You don't want to hear what I'm getting from you, Mr. Cochran.
And then he would say, you're either interested in your personal life or your professional life or something else.
Yes. Sometimes it got bawdy.
Tremendous.
Oh, thank you. Tremendous. Is this the anniversary of that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, you know how organized I am. I keep track of everything.
Wow.
Either that or I came across a box yesterday with a note in it.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
I like when you used to talk to the devil.
Oh, that was fun, too.
Hey, did you notice, Steve, how much the devil talked? You just sound like Buddy Hackett. Which I didn't think was fair to Buddy. How are you guys?
We're good.
What's going on other than we have the booze?
We've got Hector Elizondo on with us today.
Were you here for that, Anna?
Somebody, I was.
Yeah, somebody told me I look like Hector Elizondo.
What?
But you seem upset about that.
No, I'm upset about it.
It's a compliment.
It's just unusual.
Yeah. I just don't see it the same way I see old, nearly dead Billy Joel.
You know who else? Rick Renteria.
Oh.
Now that he's got the facial hair.
Has he got a goat?
Yeah.
Well, we're practically twins.
Dave, you look like Marian Hossa a lot.
Thanks.
It's a compliment.
I just take really, it that way.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you,
Bill
Wendy.
Looks like Marion Ross.
I look a little like Marion Ross. From the side. Not from front on, but side I do. I don't care.
I see Matt Nagy with you, Cochran.
Matt Nagy. Well, thank you. This is why Anna's been a friend for 20 years,
see?
Because she lies to me.
Oh.
40-year-old guy? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you guys do today?
Judy Gold.
Oh, we love Judy.
Isn't she funny?
She is really funny.
Yeah, she'll be on with us. Dean Richards to talk about some show business stuff.
She's very funny, too.
Yeah. And Hochberg, it's the law firm of Hochberg, Gold, and Richards.
Oh, fantastic. See you tomorrow.